stand clear of the doors. Por favor, manténganse alejado de las puertas.
Welcome you aboard our Highway of Guide.
If you're standing, please hold on to the handrails and stay clear of the automatic doors. They will be closing in a moment. Thank you.
A warm welcome back to our listeners to the Monorail Tales podcast. My co-host for this evening is Steve.
Hello.
Hello. So the big question is, what is on our agenda for this episode? Well, I think a little bit of Star Wars lightsaber action might come into play.
Ooh.
Even maybe a quick ride on the Galactic Star Cruiser.
Ooh.
And maybe even talking about that other park that we never talk about, but we do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, before we do all of that,
it's a universal topic.
It is. Okay. Oh, gosh. Now you're ad-libbing. That's not good. Okay. Before we do all that, we need to do two things. The first, we need a guest. And the second is to hear a little bit of background on our guest. So it's my greatest pleasure to introduce to our show for the very first time, Justin Ulrich. Welcome to the show, Justin, and how are you doing tonight?
Thank you. I'm doing fantastic. Very happy to be here.
Good. I'm going to go ahead and say this, but we've been looking to have you on for a little bit, but dangling that weenie out there a little bit. And yeah. It's like, oh, well, wait a minute. I haven't done this. Let's just wait a little bit. So, yeah. And thank you for being patient with us.
No, it's no problem at all.
Coming on. So, because I know you've got a lot of exciting things to talk about. So.
Oh, yeah, just a few.
And a very busy life you lead.
Yes.
So, let's start at the beginning.
Sure.
So where was you born, Justin?
So I was born in New Orleans, Louisiana. June 1st, 1987. I was born in New Orleans, grew up there, lived there for most of my childhood, and I moved to Orlando in high school. Went to West Orange High School here in Orlando. Moved here pretty much just to play baseball. That was pretty much my entire life up to that point. Baseball this, baseball that, and that would continue to be the trend for many years thereafter. You know, not to get ahead of myself, but especially as far as acting goes, that wasn't even a thought in my head until much later in life.
Okay, can we just stick with baseball?
Sure.
I want to do that. Why are you doing that?
Oh, okay. Over to you, Steve.
She never watched. All right. I'm sorry. And I don't know what your affiliation is with baseball, but I grew up in Atlanta.
Okay.
And I'm a Braves fan.
Sure.
I mean, I grew up in the 70s when there were like 20 people in the stadium.
Yep.
And of course, you know, they did win it last year. Good job
they
for
did.
Them. But
sure did.
So baseball, you played in college?
I did. I played junior college baseball at Delgado Community College in New Orleans, and I finished at University of Nevada, Las Vegas, UNLV. Baseball, the basketball is the Running Rebels. Baseball is the Hustling Rebels. So.
Oh, I did not know that. Yeah. So.
No one does. So it's okay.
No. I mean, I do know UNLV, but.
Yeah. It was fun.
Position?
So in college, I played third base, and then I moved to catcher a little bit to kind of finish my career.
Somebody's got a strong arm.
Yeah, strong arm and very weak knees, as it turned out. I played third base in college, which I probably should have stuck with, and then got hurt. In fact, I was hurt almost my entire career after high school, but signed as a free agent out of college, and they decided to move me to catcher. But in the side of my, what, 3 or 4 years of minor league baseball, I might have played one full year.
Yeah. So who'd you, I got to know, who'd you play for in minors?
So I finished to play independent ball for a little while. I finished with the Blue Jays. But again, oh, cool. It was the most unprolific baseball career you could imagine.
Blue Jays.
Still.
Yes.
You played.
I did. And it was a good experience.
Sure.
Okay, I can come into this conversation
here
now.
Here she comes.
Yes.
Here comes the Canadian.
That's all I know. Actually, sorry, Justin, I'm not a sports fan, but Blue Jays, yes.
Of course, I've never been to Toronto. The closest I got was Dunedin, Florida.
Oh, got it. That's honey, that's the spring training.
It is. I got the spring training complex. That was about it.
Yeah.
That's where their advanced A ball team is as well.
Ah, cool.
Yeah.
So do you miss it?
Oh, goodness. Yes. It's very much a love-hate relationship in the sense that, I don't know, growing up, that was what I assumed that was going to be, you know, all I'd ever do was play baseball. And especially as I got older and that became closer and closer to being a reality, as far as, you know, everything kind of lined up as far as the talent level, the work that was put in, the opportunities, all those things were lining up to that was going to be the path of my life. And I was going to be very successful in that. And then, you know, life has a way of changing things. And then started with an ankle injury and then a knee injury and then a shoulder and a thumb and then another ankle, another knee. And, you know, then they go, hey, you think you're done? And you go, yeah, I think you're correct. And so it was all in all a good experience. It was a lot of fun.
But that must have been very hard to accept that, you know.
Oh, goodness. It was it broke me for a while because especially – because every time you would recover from the injury, you would think, all right, now we're good. And then you'd go and you'd play. And you were, and again, I was successful again because regardless of what happened, I was very good at it. But then as soon as things would start to pick up again, something else would, you know, another ligament would snap somewhere or another.
Wow.
And, you know, and especially when, you know, you think this is fate or destiny or whatever you have. And, you know, kind of losing that dream is it's a unique loss, and it feels cruel in a way. And so, especially the last time I dealt with it, like, you know, any, you know, healthy person would, I grew a beard down to my chest and I went to wildfires in Northern California.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah,
that's what I did. I didn't know what to do with myself. And so I didn't shave for a year, and I moved to Weberville, California, where I worked for the Forestry Service fighting wildfires.
Oh, good for you. Wow.
Which was speaking of experiences, that was something.
Yeah.
It was at the time, it was the busiest recorded fire season in history. And so, and I made the decision. I was reading an article about the Granite Mountain Hotshots. They were a firefighting mm-hmm. in Arizona, who 19 of the 21 of them were tragically killed in a fire.
Correct. They and actually made a movie about that.
Exactly, they did. I wanted to be a part of it. Apparently from reading that article, it made me decide that was what I needed to do. So you can draw whatever conclusions you want from that. But I didn't have a death wish or anything. It just seemed like it was something different. And so I did. I got away and I was gone for what, 6-8 months, something like that. And it was something I would do again for the first time, but not again.
I understand that.
And when it comes to firemen and, you know, other services responders like that, it's a saying that you've heard many a time, but people like you rush in when people are rushing out. Mm-hmm. I mean, was there any time when you were working where you did feel that, you know, you feared for your life?
As a matter of fact, yes. So being a new man in the group, I was mainly I spent a lot of time as a lookout. So you were up in a cabin on the top of a mountain. I was living at a little over 8,000 feet elevation. And your job is to maintain radio communication throughout, you know, the whole, your area, make sure all the crews can talk to each other. And as well as you also have the law enforcement officers and you have wilderness patrols, whatever, all those things. And you're on top. So you're making sure they're all talking to each other the way they need to. But you're also looking for, actively looking for fire. And remember vividly looking down and seeing a little puff of smoke at the base of this mountain that I was on and calling it in. And then, you know, coming back 5 minutes later and it was halfway up the mountain.
Oh, wow.
And 15 minutes later, there's a helicopter on top of it, escorted me out. And as kind of a helicopter never fully touched down, you know, blades kept spinning. And I just, they threw me a helmet and I hopped in and off we went.
Wow.
But as far as ever feeling like I was in imminent danger, the most danger I was ever in was I was on lookout duty and decided that I'd been there for about a week. You live on top of this mountain by yourself for, it was about a week. And I was like, I need a shower. and so I was like, I'm going to, it's June, but you're at 8,000 feet. So it's like 40 degrees. And the wind's blowing. Right. We have this little porta potty thing, and it's they had it rigged up to where it was also a shower. And it's like I'm gonna go take myself a shower. So I come down from the cabin, the tower cabin, whatever it is, and it's right at twilight. It's mostly dark, and so take my towel off, and I go inside this little porta potty thingy. And being from, you know, New Orleans, Florida, I've never seen or heard a rattlesnake before.
Oh, no.
But when I heard it, I knew exactly what it was.
Oh, yeah, you do.
I remember just sprinting down the mountain, butt naked, cutting my feet up. But that was that was most scared I was for my life the whole time I was there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I've only heard one time in my life, and it was in a golf course, and I was a kid, a golf course in California. And you're right. You know that sound.
And you're like, oh, no.
Oh. Yeah.
Kicked at it and ran.
I didn't kick at it.
I'm in a phone booth of this thing, so it's like.
You were inside with it?
Yeah. So I go in, I close the door, and I go, and all of a sudden you hear a.
Like, yeah. Oh.
So I just kicked where I heard the noise and threw the door open and ran down the mountain.
Wow.
I don't know if I would have kicked.
It wasn't a decision. It would just kind of.
Reaction?
Yeah. That's what I mean. I mean, it's like.
Flight kicks.
Wow.
So, you know.
All right, I'm going to pull the old age card out here. But you're about the same age as my son. He was born in 88. But you've been through quite a bit.
Yeah.
You've had some ups and downs.
Yeah.
Even in this short little conversation we've had. But it sounds like you're just a very resilient person, can I say?
I would agree with that. And sometimes you feel less, you know, not quite as resilient as others. But a lot of that is kind of, you know, micro focus versus macro. You know, if you're inside of a moment, the moment's going to kind of dominate what you feel and how you think. But when I have the opportunity to kind of step back and look at everything that's happened since I was 17 years old. Yeah. You know, there's a confidence that has been developed there that, you know, things are going to happen. And if you just stay true to who you are and what you believe, then it may not work out the way you want it to, but it will work out.
Yeah. So this positive look on things, which is what it is.
Yeah.
And we're not going to get any deeper than this because I'm loving this.
I am too.
Yeah. Where did this come from?
So, I grew up, my grandfather's a pastor, or was a pastor. I grew up in the church.
Yep.
And really, that's the only way that I can really think of that it, you know, feel blessed to have the family that I have and to grow up the way that I did, and just with the faith that I have, as far as that there is something that I am planned for, that I am slowly discovering, maybe slower than I need to, but we're getting there.
Right.
Do you know something, Justin? I mean, I know you and I had talked very briefly on the phone a few weeks ago. We tonight have only been talking 16 minutes, but I feel so uplifted just listening to what you're saying.
Well,
and And I know our listeners are going to, I know we should be talking Disney, but.
And we'll get to that.
We will get to that.
Well, she's still cringing about the rattlesnake in the thing, which I got to admit, I am too.
But this is so uplifting, listening.
Yeah, very much.
To what you're saying. And well, wow.
I'm glad.
Did you have any other questions about California?
Yeah, let's get back to Disney. Did you ever go to Disneyland when you were there?
I have. So I've never been to Disneyland.
Okay.
I haven't. So wow. I actually lived in Los Angeles for several months, and I never went to Disneyland. It was this. It was this kind of dangling carrot that I kept in front of myself that there was this thing that I'm going to book some kind of TV show or something, and it's going to take me to LA. And then when I book it, then I'm going to go to Disneyland.
There you go.
And I assumed I would have caught that carrot by now, but I haven't. But it's still there. It's still out there dangling and enticing me.
Okay. So from that statement you've just made, I do have a couple of questions.
Sure.
One of them is, when was the first time you went to Walt Disney World? How old was you then?
I think I had just turned 5. We lived in Longview, Texas, and right before I'd been given a camera as a present, and every time you took a picture, it would superimpose one of the Ninja Turtles on the film, so it would print out, and there'd be a little tiny Ninja Turtle in the bottom right corner. And so we have all these pictures of Disney World of like random things like people's shins and the ceiling of a restaurant, you know, whatever a 5-year-old takes pictures of. And they all have a little tiny Ninja Turtle in the bottom right corner.
Oh, that's so sweet.
And I remember the trip vividly because that was also when they actually had the Ninja Turtles at MGM.
Right. And
those costumes were incredible. But yeah, that was the first time I went. We went to MGM, and I remember MGM more than I remember any other park for whatever reason.
And then, okay.
I got to ask, do you still have those pictures?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Oh,
I got to find them, but I have them somewhere.
Oh, that's awesome.
Okay, so you were 5 years old, and I don't know how to ask the next question of you because it's kind of like you mentioned something about acting in mm-hmm. the statement that you made a few minutes ago, but now we're also talking Disney. So let me try it this way. As you're growing up, what came first? Was it, I want to be an actor, or I want to work for Disney? What was the strongest feeling growing up?
Well, growing up, it was just baseball. Until 26, 27.
I forgot about baseball.
Oh, no. So me, probably an actor, but they were really closely tied together. So I'll tell you the story.
Yeah.
After I came home from California, from the mountain, that's how I phrase it. You know, when I came down from the mountain, shaved the beard. And when I say I had a beard, my beard was, it was something. But I came back, shaved the beard off, and then I had to find something to do. And so one of the first things I did was like, I'll just go be a character at Disney World. Because several years ago, I had tried to get a summer job at Universal, and they were going to hire me as Zorro until I told them I was available for 2 months. And then they laughed at me. And so I was like, I can do that again. So I go in to these auditions. They're massive cattle call auditions with like 400 or 500 people. And you walk in front of someone and they stare at you for like 5 seconds. And then you're either in or you're out. Then you move on to a dance portion. And then also do some character work. And that's just for the character. And so I'm like, all right, that's fine. In the midst of all this, I had met someone who suggested that I actually try doing more, you know, serious acting, not just that. And so I started took an acting class, two different ones here in town, one at an improv theater, and then also ones that were for commercials and TV and film. Mm-hmm. So while going through that, I saw the auditions for Star Wars. It was the Jedi Training Academy. And I was like, that sounds perfect. So I go. The first audition was in October, right before, because they had the old show, which was had the big fluffy robes, and that was kind of it was birthed from Star Wars weekends, and it became an everyday offering. And then once Disney bought Star Wars, they were able to make their own new show, which was Jedi Training: Trials of the Temple. So I auditioned for it, get a call back. Goes great. Callback goes through. I don't get the job. I'm like, oh well. But disappointed. But I'm also brand new and as green as I can possibly be. So I should have been surprised if I got the job, not if I didn't get it.
Right.
So time goes on. Continue taking classes, doing a little of this, a little of that. Do a couple shows in the meantime. One of which was Little Women, a rap musical. Yeah. So anyways, they have another audition in early January. So I'm like, all right. So we go to Disney right before it. The show is already open at this point. I go and I watch the show. I'm like, all right, I see what they're going for. Like, I can do that. This is going to be great. Like, I have no doubt that it's going to work this time. So I go in. There was something like 650 people show up to the audition. I got there at 8 o'clock in the morning. I didn't audition until like 5 p.m.
Wow.
So like, I just sat in this room for, all day. Go in, I audition for 30 seconds, and they go, okay, thank you, and I leave. Nothing. No callback, no nothing. And in my mind, no. That's unacceptable. So I go pull up the Disney Auditions website on my phone, and I see that there is another audition in 4 days in New York City. So I go home and I'm like, I don't have the money to do this, but I'm going to find the money. So I do. And I just spend money I don't have, fly to New York, don't have a hotel room, don't have anything. As soon as I get in, hop in a cab and I go straight to Pearl Studios right by Madison Square Garden and walk in. And casting director sees me and goes, what are you doing here? And my thought was, so I could, make something up about how I just happened to be. But said, no, I'm not going to do that. And I told him I was there. This is something that I want to do, and it means a lot to me. So I figured if this is what I have to do to see if I can change things, then I'll do it. So audition. And whether it was he felt bad for me or what, he kept me around for another day. We have the callbacks the next day. And they go well. During the callback, you have a longer section of the script. Then you also have to learn a lightsaber combination and then also a full choreographed fight with one of my maintenance choreographers, which is Disney's phrase for someone who kind of maintains the whole show as far as where you're supposed to be, what you're supposed to say. And she became one of my better friends at Disney World, the one I auditioned with. Cool. So anyways, 2 or 3 weeks later, get a phone call. And I've been, was at Disney ever since. And it was showed up to the first rehearsal and realized just how big of a deal the whole thing was. Because the first rehire was like eight people that played my role, Van Zelmar. And of those, one had been on Broadway, one had done a Broadway tour. One of them had toured with Ringling for like 7 years. Okay. And so that was that. In fact, that was for the most part my first professional acting job, was as an equity actor at Disney.
And what year was this?
2016.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's the new show, JT3, as we affectionately refer to it. It opened in late 2015, and then I was signed on February of 2016.
Before you got the role, were you into Star Wars?
I was a casual fan.
Okay. What are you today?
I can talk Star Wars for days at this point.
I'll bet.
I do. I love Star Wars. I really do. From the especially the cartoons, they're fantastic. Which, in fact, like the first time I had to watch the cartoons is because our characters were based on Kanan and Ezra from Rebels. And so I watched the first season, especially trying to figure out, what are they going for? Because my thing with, you know, I looked around and felt so out of place. My way of trying to make sure I fit in was that I was going to take the job as seriously as possible. So I took fencing lessons. I, you know, spent more time on the script than probably anybody else ever needed to. You know, just want to make sure that I wasn't taking anything for granted as far as what it was and what it deserved.
Well, it just shows that you love your craft.
Oh, yeah. And especially this is that job, especially was every day was a unique blessing. Every show, something fun happened because you have 30 kids on stage, you know, 15 fight against Vader, 15 against Kylo Ren. And every time something happened, that was fun. Like something happened. But so, yeah, I came in as a very casual Star Wars fan. Like, yeah, it's fun. It's just cool. Yeah. Watch it if it's on TV. I love Yoda. You know, I mimic his voice. So, you know, that's fun, but not anywhere near what it is now, where I can tell you the seven forms of lightsaber combat and
yeah. You
know, like all that good stuff.
Yeah, it has kind of escalated into a whole different, do I say universe?
Galaxy, even.
Our galaxy, yes.
Actually, very quickly, I would like to take you back 8 years to the very first time you was on that stage in front of guests.
Oh, yeah.
And what was that feeling like for you?
Oh, my goodness. So I remember it so well. I had one of the crew I was with that day. You have like my apprentice, Nedris, and they were all, they became very, very good friends of mine. But I remember, so at that point, what we would do is we would walk down the fast pass aisle of the Star Tours ride. And then you would have the 30 kids who were waiting at the kind of the foot of the stage, and we'd introduce ourselves to them, and then we'd walk them on stage when the music hit, that extraordinarily loud music. But I remember vividly, to this day, I remember walking down and having I remember tearing up as I walked down and having to kind of stop myself from getting over emotional. Like, you still have a show to do. Just relax. But just feeling so, it was a joy that was a unique joy of feeling like this is something that I really wanted and that I loved, and it was finally happening. You know, I'm in the costume. I have my lightsaber with people I like. It was a neat thing. And in the audience, my mom, my family was there. They were all there to watch. A lot of people I trained in with, we all kind of came and saw each other's first shows, which was super sweet. But it was this kind of this deeply satisfying moment.
So when you sort of like put on the costume, I think that's the correct word.
Yeah.
Does Justin go away and that character take over?
So the fun part about being a Jedi is that there is no one way to be a Jedi. More than anything else, it's what you can bring to that rather than what it can bring to you, which is really neat because there was a wide collection of people who played this role. And so if we were all supposed to be the same, it would have never worked. And so it's more or less bringing out the qualities of Justin that are most congruent with being a Jedi. And so the things that I hold dear, I can kind of amplify those and make sure those are kind of under a, you know, they're magnified, they're bigger. If that makes any sense.
Sure.
So,
no, it does.
The hardest part I had as far as that goes was I have a thick natural accent, you know, being born and raised in the South. One of the first things I had to do as an actor was learn how to speak without it.
Yeah.
And so, especially in rehearsal, you know, the more tired I get, the thicker the accent becomes. And so we would have overnight rehearsals because you can't rehearse, you know, on the stage during park hours. So it's 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning. And all of a sudden, you know, Tony, the director, is sitting there going, hey, you can't. Head is only supposed to have one syllable, not three.
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry. Hey, just get tired. So,
yeah.
Because we said the word head 37,000 times every show.
And yeah.
Head. Sorry.
Hey, maybe that's what I need to do to get rid of my accent. take voice lessons.
Although, to be fair, they would love your accent.
So, all right, I've got to ask this one as well.
Sure.
You can get all the easy questions. And did you ever have an embarrassing moment on stage?
Oh, man. Let's see. The first one's when I blew my pants out. That was a great one. Oh.
Okay.
They had a full-blown, like, they split down the middle, yeah. And that was that. And you're just like, and you can't see how much they've ripped or not ripped. And so you just back up and stand against the wall and do the show. And then that happened again two more times. But the one time it was like a full blown, my pants are no longer pants.
Oh my gosh.
That happened. Had a kid knock me down once, which actually led to one of my favorite pictures I've ever had at the stage of me just sitting there. I was bent down to talk to a kid and he just turned around, hit me square in the face and knocked me back. And you're like, well, this is the most un-Jedi thing I've ever seen. Let's see. We had a lightsaber malfunction and the blade went flying into the audience. but I think my personal favorite was there was a time when they experimented on doing shows after park hours.
Right.
So we had a show. Park closed at 7. We had a show at 7:15. So okay, that's our 7:10, something like that. So that's fine. It was only the family in the audience. But whoever decided didn't tell whomever was in charge of music and sound, because halfway through our show, over the loudspeakers, the exit, like park exit goodbye music started playing. And so we're trying to fight against Kylo Ren, and all you can hear is, I can find my way, I can go the distance from Hercules. Over all of it, you're just like, this is ridiculous. So
y'all should have danced.
Oh, yeah. Well, you start just making, you find the ways to make puns and such about it.
Oh, yeah.
I have more things happened on that stage than anywhere else. Oh, so.
Okay.
One of my favorite parts of the job is we had Make-A-Wish kids almost every day, and you had a chance
to spend
time with them. This one. No, not this one.
Okay. So,
this is a different one. So we had a Make-A-Wish kid, and I mean, you know, and he, you know, didn't have any hair, the whole, and so he's up on the top tier, he's about to fight Darth Vader, and at this point in our show, Nedris the apprentice has to do a kata. She has to do like a little flourish with her lightsaber. And it's right in the middle of all the kids, and which has always seemed like a strange choice to me, but that was fine. Well, anyways, she's doing her kata, and all of a sudden you hear a whack. And she has hit this Make-A-Wish child, this little like 8-year-old boy. And we all just go dead silent. Just, oh. And then all of a sudden, after about, I don't know, it was 3 seconds, but it felt like an eternity. All of a sudden, you just hear, ha, 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 I got hit in the face. This kid just in a full-blown, like, you know, 1,000-watt smiles, laughing and cackling. He's the only noise you can hear in the entire, like, area of the park. And next, and then his dad goes, sure, Dad. We were able to just to move on. But for those, like, 5 seconds.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. That's just, yeah.
So, yeah, there's all kinds of fun things that happened.
Well, that was a good one, because that could have been...
Oh, it could have been. Ended. It could have been the worst day.
Yeah.
The worst day. Things. All kind of like I've gashed my hand open once. That was fun. Off a kid's lightsaber kind of cracked over the top, and it became a sharp edge, and I went to grab it, and it cut my hand open. And I didn't realize it until I went to go grab a kid, and there was blood everywhere.
Wow.
No. Yeah.
I never thought that you would have injuries like that.
Because
it's plastic, yeah. Yes.
So it was. It's still. So what happened was originally, Disney is they know what they're doing. We gave the kids toy lightsabers. And as soon as the show, they're actually fantastic toys. Like they really are. But as soon as the show was over, there was a cart like right where the kids leave selling lightsabers. And we would sell like 20 a show. But eventually they kept breaking and they just wear and tear. So that we went and we whoever in the tech department, they went and made new lightsabers, which is great. They lasted a whole lot longer, but they were weapons. So next, if we had to change some things on how to make sure these kids didn't kill each other or themselves or us. So They are combat rated, very thick plastic. They're good. They're really nice. They can do some damage.
What a job. I mean, it must have filled your heart every day to see these big smiles on these kids' faces and even the parents' faces because their kids are on stage.
The parents were a lot of times better than the kids. Like the parents were, because a lot of them, you know, especially like with dads who have grown up with Star Wars and their kids fighting against Darth Vader and they're going nuts when he gets up there. And it's only like top 5-10 seconds, but it's like they're, y'all are just fun. And then you would have, so we have optional meet and greets that we're given the option if we can do them or not. I was almost never going to say no. And so you go and meet with anybody. It's guest recovery. So something has happened. They've, you know, some kid fell down outside. They're trying to make sure the kid's okay and happy. So they come and say, hey, would you mind meeting with a kid? Yeah, sure. Any number of things could happen. You know, ride breaks down. Who knows?
Right.
But those one-on-ones were almost always just my favorite part of the day. Just get to talk to somebody. Take a picture.
So is that kind of more your personality? You like doing the one-on-one?
Yeah. In fact, that was my favorite part of playing baseball was after the game, I'd stick around and whoever wanted to talk, get autographs, take pictures, whatever. I'd be there all night.
Cool.
And it led to some all kinds of interesting friendships.
Now, you did the Star Wars. Did you, have you, or do you want to do anything different at Walt Disney World? I know we're going to talk about the new resort, but...
Oh, yeah.
We'll get to that later. It was also
Green Army. I did Sarge from Toy Story.
Oh, okay.
Which was so much fun. Because it's the kind of thing, like, first off, it's probably the best costume Disney has, period. It's so good. The boots are incredibly easy to walk in. That's the one question everyone asked.
That would be my question.
They look extremely difficult.
They do, but they were more comfortable to walk in than my Jedi boots. That's okay. No exaggeration, no hyperbole. Like they really were. But no one really nobody goes to Disney World for the most part expecting or wanting to go see the Green Army Men, which means that expectations are very low. Like you're just there, you're extra, you're Lanyap, you're some kind of, you know, extra magic that's sprinkled on top of their vacation. And because of that, you have the opportunity to you know, completely change their entire trip. Because, you know, the things that make your Disney vacation magical aren't the things you're expecting. They're the things you're not.
Got it.
And so, especially, like, people come to do the Jedi Training Academy. They do not come to have interactions with, you know, Sarge or whom are one of the Green Army Patrol. And so, those were so much fun. So much so that I would get in trouble because I would lose track of time.
What was that outfit, that costume like to wear in the hot sun?
Jedi was worse.
Really?
Oh, yeah, Jedi. We were wearing corduroy pants, boots. I have three layers on top, one of which is like a burlap sack. Green Army is it's all like mesh. And so even though it's like a rubber, vinyl, whatever it is, it's not terrible.
Okay.
The only issue there is the you have to wear something over your head, which obviously, you know, that gets hot. And then, the paint. And the paint isn't hot as much as the sweat collects on top of it. So you have people going, you know, why are you so sweaty? You're a toy. I'm like, because it's condensation. I'm melting.
Yeah, it's like it's wax.
Very sweaty.
The sun is melting my wax.
Yeah. You found all kinds of things, you know, ways like when people would say Andy's coming, which has not been a thing for a long time.
Right.
Or even our Sid's coming. You go, no, there's no bad guys in Andy's backyard. Only good guys. I look at you. I see the best of the good guys, and I'll see you later. And you walk off. You know, whatever. It's fine ways to you know.
I didn't even think about that. So did you get that? Andy's coming.
Oh, every 15 seconds.
Oh my gosh, really? I have never heard
thing
it.
Online, and so it's. I mean, and then when one person does it, then it. So it would be like, all right, look, guys. Andy's not coming. Look up there. We have private so-and-so. He's up there with binoculars. He's looking. If Andy's coming, he would let us know.
Awesome.
We appreciate your vigilance.
Do you have a script that you go by on those sort of things, or a script, you know, that you can kind of follow, or do you ad lib?
When you're doing the Green Army Patrol show, yes, even though that's a very improvised show. When you're just out and about, Kind of, but not really. So we had a scavenger hunt we were supposed to do, and sometimes that would work, and sometimes you just wind up walking around and just talking to people. Now, you had some of us who were very intent that they were going to do a scavenger hunt no matter what, and others of us, especially myself, who I was just going out there to mess around and talk to people, which got me in trouble from here and there. But
okay, I'm gonna put you on the spot here. Sure. Did you enjoy Green Army Man better than Star Wars because you had more interaction with the guests?
Overall, no. The thing with Green Army is it was kind of a treat. I would only do it like once every few weeks. So when I got to do it, it was like I gotta go do this again. But as far as what I found more enjoyable, Jedi is by far the most rewarding.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
Just because that one is something you're making, you know, to use the very popular phrase, you're making core memories for people every day. So
you're making Jedi magic.
Exactly.
I do have a question, and that is, and actually,
what, Padawan?
I've always wondered this. How long is a shift on a normal day doing the Jedi training at Magic Kingdom?
So five shows.
Five
shows.
And your shows last, what, 20 minutes?
It depends on who does them, but yeah, about 20 minutes.
Okay, so what do you do in between?
It depends. So sometimes... Depends. Sometimes you're going to do back-to-back shows, which originally was you had a 10-minute break and you just go right. And so for me, I would have preferred to do, because you're on you're getting paid on show credit, not on hours. So every show is worth a certain amount of hours. So if it was me and I had my, you know, my druthers, I would just say, I want to do five shows back-to-back and go home. Because then I'm getting paid for 8 hours by working like 3.5. But I was the only one who... Literally the only one who requested that. So what you do is you go back to the break room. One of the most beautiful parts of Jedi was that we had the closest break room of any place I've ever been. We were all very close friends, and that actually sustained itself through the entire, you know, what, 5 years that I was there. It was pretty incredible. So you go in, and then we have all kinds of little things to do. There's, you know, you play TV. We have video games. You can go take a nap if you really want to.
Okay, now, see, it's changed now because I now know that those cast members are not getting paid when they go backstage.
Correct.
Okay. I was just, you know, wondering if you got paid, if you were paid for a shift, you know, 8 to 5, if...
So technically, yeah. So, I mean, I'm getting paid like it's 8 to 5, but my show is worth, we'll say, 1.3 hours. You know, so it makes it up. It just, that's why we're not required to do the meet and greets. Those are, if you want to, you can. And some of us would, some of us wouldn't.
You are also working at Universal.
I am. In fact, I'll be there tomorrow.
Okay.
We have to work a certain amount of hours to you know, maintain seasonal status during spring break. So I'll be there tomorrow.
So I don't know. I don't want to.
Can we ask what you do there?
Oh, I'm a raptor expert. So I introduce guests to Blue the Velociraptor. And then I make fun of you after you get scared.
Okay. I should point out, I haven't been to Universal. When was the last time went, Steve?
A long time. It was before Harry Potter. I think my son was 14.
Okay.
It's been 19 years. 12 years. Jeez.
Yeah, so what I do is it's in the Jurassic Park world. Blue, the Velociraptor, is 20 feet long. She's 13 feet tall. She weighs 6,000 pounds.
Ooh.
And you can have a personal, intimate encounter with her. And so it's my job to kind of set up that encounter, make sure you're where you're supposed to be and doing what you're supposed to be doing, and also make sure she doesn't do anything she's not supposed to do, which works to varying degrees of success.
Have we seen this on the commercials?
Yes. Oh,
good. Okay, got it.
There are flight things and has been for some time now. And if you were to see it, it's incredible. Like, it really, really is. When I was hired for it, they told me what it was, and I'm like, that sounds very silly. And then I showed up and I went, holy cow, that's a dinosaur. Whoa. So it's really cool.
And then what it can do, it looks real.
Oh, it is. It's the most real thing I've ever seen. It's incredible.
I even seen it on TikTok every once in a while. Yep. People, you know, with the encounter. And they just think they're getting a picture taken. And then, and I jump every time. And I know it's happening.
It's a lot of fun. And because, again, something fun happens almost every time you're there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fun.
I'd pass on that one, I think. I'd probably pass out on that one, actually.
Now, to be fair, I can also adjust it to make it more or less scary as need be.
For age appropriate.
Oh, definitely that too. Yeah.
You'd have to definitely just scare the tar out of Sheila if she's on it.
No, he would be dumbing it down big time.
No, because I would talk to him.
It depends. Like if you come in there and you're already scared. But you're, you know, the rest of the people in your party are very much enjoying the fact that you're scared. There's a good chance you're going to get a lot more scared.
Yeah.
There's a very good chance that we're going to make this for all it's worth.
So. Yeah, you can go on a solo on that trip. So. I would not trust
that. I got to admit, that thing scares me. And I don't scare easy. And I look at that even when, it's like, I don't think I would turn my back.
And you have to, because you can't look it in the eye. You know, if you look it in the eye, it's going to look back at you. Might see something it likes, might see something it doesn't like, and I don't know which is worse. So, the suspension of disbelief is you know, it works better some places than at others.
Mm-hmm.
It works very well. It really works well at Raptor Encounter. It's an incredible experience.
I'm gonna have to go on.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to show Sheila that one because it is incredible. So now, when you say you're in control of that, are you actually like taking the pictures of the video, or are you actually?
I'm the expert. So I'm there.
Okay.
The one of my escorts is taking the picture. And I'm there just talking to you as you take your picture with the dinosaur.
Ah, okay.
So I'm kind of the host, or I call it the liaison. I facilitate the encounter.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's not a terrible gig. It's fun.
No.
Now, all this kind of, a lot of this has been pre-COVID time. Mm-hmm. That you've been sharing with us. And then that, you know, sad day came for Disney and Universal where they had to close the gates and you were furloughed. And that must have been really hard for you and your fellow cast members that last day. Where do you go from there?
So I had been actually right when it happened, I was in New York. I'd been there for a few months, doing as much TV commercial and you know, stage as I could. I had moved there first of the year. And so I had gone part time at both parks, gone part time and moved up there. And so, and things were going very well. Things were going real well until it happened. And then I was stuck there for a couple of weeks and then went, I'm going home. So I came home with the idea being that, you know, there's no way Disney stays closed. You know, they got to open back up in a couple of weeks.
Right.
And then, then it didn't. And then when it finally did, it was without, I think of the 900 actors at Disney World, I remember hearing something, and this may not be completely accurate, but something like only 60 came back. So it was a big, and then on top of that, I remember it too, is right around Thanksgiving, I got the letter saying that I was going to be, you know, that I was, my contract was terminated completely. I was no longer furloughed. I was, you know, laid off.
Right.
And so I remember, because I was with a equity actor friend of mine when we both got the email, and just both of us, he was a full-time, he worked over at Pandora as one of the Utila suit. I forgot what it's called.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was over, and so both of us just sat there, and we just sat silently for 20, 30 minutes. Like, wow. Because Matt had been there for, he'd been at Disney for like 20 years at that point, 23, 24 years.
Oh, my.
So, so it was a weird experience, you know, as far as you know, you feel like theme park for an actor, it's really hard to find a job that pays the bills, you know, that is steady and you don't have to, you know, just keep hustling. And so you assume that Disney is kind of, it's recession proof. It's, you know, and then all of a sudden it's not.
Yeah.
But just like most things, it led to opportunities that I would not have had otherwise. You know, whether it's the hotel, whether it's what I get to do on a daily basis now, it's you know, it was it wound up not being the worst thing.
Well, can you talk about that briefly? Just what did you do?
So
to get out of the doldrums of the COVID.
So I started taking, just me being me, I started taking workshops and acting classes online. Because, you know, I now have access to all kinds of people all over the world. So I was like, I'm going to meet as many people as possible. So I did that. And then I also decided I got to pay some bills. So I went to this Facebook group called Ear for Each Other. And I put something up saying, hey, I played professional baseball. I would love to give baseball lessons. But you also have to introduce, you know, yourself and say, you know, what you did. So I said, yeah, I'm a Jedi. I was a Jedi at the park, so on and so forth. Nobody cared about baseball. Nobody at all cared about getting baseball lessons. They all very much cared about me coming to their hotels and resorts and doing one-on-one Jedi training, which was not something I advertised. That's not even something I thought that wasn't even a thought in my head. But apparently it should have been. So what happened was I post this thing and one person reaches out. I say, sure. So I go to the Swan and Dolphin, me and her kid, and I just made up a bunch of stuff. Literally just made up just a bunch of Jedi stuff. Like, I don't know what to do. Let's do this. At one point, we were playing cornhole. Like, it was the most, just, you know, whatever I could figure out to do in the moment. But she took some pictures, and she posted those pictures on Facebook. And within about 24 hours, I had something like 200, 250 messages of people wanting the same experience. And I was like, well, okay. And that's what I did. I've developed my own little script, made it work. And then that's what I do. I go out. And especially since the show isn't operating still, we're waiting on from a few things, according to the rumors I've gotten recently, before we can open. I do it every day. In fact, I did four today, four one-on-one private Jedi training sessions.
So the baseball went away. Baseball bats, sorry.
No,
That went away. You can tell.
No, it turned into a
lightsaber.
Lightsaber.
Exactly.
Although you can't hit a baseball with it.
Right. Nope, it would
just split the baseball in half.
Yeah.
And I've seen quite a few of your photos, Justin, where, you know, your customers, clients, whatever you like to call them, have posted, you know, Justin came to our resort. And I look at these pictures and you see the kids' faces and you know they're having a blast with you.
I didn't have as much fun as they do, to be honest with you. I mean, some are more fun than others, but for the most part, they're always a good time.
Okay, so the first person that you ever went to, mm-hmm. Was that the one at the Swan Dolphin?
Correct. That was the very first one. In fact, I posted, this is a funny coincidence. I posted the thing on Facebook 1 year ago today. So this
Yeah.
To the day, 1 year anniversary of it.
Okay. So happy anniversary.
Yeah.
Congratulations. You should be very proud of yourself. It sounds like your business is really still doing extremely well.
Yeah.
So how do you, besides Ear for Each Other, how else do you advertise this? Is it all word of mouth now?
I have never advertised.
Yeah.
Honestly, I've never advertised for myself. One, I haven't really needed to, but I also have been kind of twofold. One, Disney hasn't had Disney's never said anything, you know, to tell me to stop. So I figure I'll just keep doing what I'm doing and that won't change. But also too, it's kind of been this thing of kind of riding a wave and just seeing how far it will take you.
Sure.
And so thus far, that has been a good decision, and that doesn't seem to be stopping. And it, when such a time comes that it's time to move on and do something different, then I'm sure that that will be kind of obvious and apparent. But
I don't see this one going away, to be honest.
Maybe, because what I'd love to do is find some other people to, even if I have to leave, have someone else that I can kind of trust and train into it to continue on. Because even if the show comes back, there are certain families and certain individuals that could not do the show. I've done Jedi training for families that, you know, their kids are far too old for it, and I've you know, mentally challenged or you know, however you want to phrase that, who this is all they wanted to do, and I've been able to do it for them. In fact, I've made friends with one, and he and I went and met their family at Hollywood Studios a couple weeks ago, and we just rode rides together.
Oh, sweet.
I've done a number of with adults. In fact, I did a bachelor party a couple weeks ago. You know, so there's a need for it, so to speak, or at least a desire for it.
A bachelor party or a bachelorette?
Yep. Bachelor.
Okay.
Bachelorette party, I think someone would. My mom would, or not my mom, my wife.
I was
would,
about to say your yeah. wife.
Would not particularly appreciate. So, although there has been a request. So it's not conjecture. I know she wouldn't be okay with it.
Yeah.
Actually, can I just stop you there?
No, you cannot have him for your, and you're married. And no.
No, seriously. Before we actually started recording this show, you shared with us that you had been married for 5 months.
Yeah.
So can we do a big shout out for your wife at this stage? Just sure. To say hi. Yeah.
Lindsay, she can hear me anyways.
Well, hey, Lindsay, thank you so much for lending Justin to us for this interview. And yeah, keep him away from those bachelorette
No,
parties.
Let him. Come on. I mean, never mind. I'm not
I will say my favorite thing, literally maybe my favorite thing I've done was a birthday party for a 65-year-old woman.
Wow.
It was cool. And I show up and there I'm like, what do y'all want? And they're like, whatever you do with the kids. I was like, you don't want me to? No, we just want exactly what you do with the kids. And so it was me and a bunch of senior adult ladies.
Oh, my gosh.
At we're in the grassy area of Caribbean Beach Resort. Playing
oh,
with
wow.
In the twilight, like at nighttime. So they were all lit up, and we had so much fun. I was there for like 2 hours.
And actually, this is when I'm glad Rick isn't on the show tonight, our other co-host, because I know he'd be making really not nice jokes about me. So. Yeah.
And I'm holding my tongue.
Because you're sat opposite me, yes.
Yeah, I can get hit.
Okay, so do you provide all the, you know, lightsabers for them?
Usually they have their own. I highly recommend, you know, at various places at Disney to buy their own and build their own and stuff like that. But if they don't, I bring the lightsabers, and that's really it. I, you know, don't come in a full costume, but something that kind of suggests a Jedi.
Right. Okay.
You know, and no one's complained, which is why I haven't changed.
But I don't think they would really, I wouldn't expect that. I don't
Not
think.
Not now, but maybe in the future.
Maybe. But, I mean, it's like, I'm just trying to think how to, where I'm going with this question. Give me a second.
No, you're fine.
You're not going back to the bachelorette party.
Yeah, I think that's it. At the back of my mind.
Yeah.
It's like... No. So, when you go, how long are you there performing?
It depends. The whole, like, as far as what my script is that I've kind of written for myself, it's about a half an hour.
Okay.
But sometimes it's shorter. Like, you know, In fact, my favorite one of my favorite ones was I got there. It was about 5 minutes long, and they went, "All right, we're good." And I said, "Okay." And they were perfectly happy. And I was like, "All right, that's fine." But I've also been there, like I said, with the senior adult ladies. It was a couple hours. I've done, like, I was there. One of the ones that today, I was like an hour and 15 minutes just because me and the two dads got into a full-blown conversation about Star Wars. So, you know.
Okay, so it's not so, say, a set time.
Not really. Not, I mean, not really, but I have to, there's somewhere I have to be. Like, if I have back-to-back ones, I'm probably going to, you know, like, find a way to make my exit. But
yeah,
on the whole, I feel like the more generous with my time I can be, the better the whole thing is. You know, because at the end of the day, you're trying to give people something that does make these trips better. And people spend a lot of money and a lot of time, you know, sacrificing to come here. And whether it's working at the park or doing what I'm doing, I want to make sure that I can do whatever I can to make as magical as possible, you know, so to speak.
And I know what I was trying to say when I was blubbering. To me, I would think it's even more special for that kid to have one-on-one training where you go to them as opposed to being in a park and, you know, when people get into the parks, they want to be doing things. So this frees that time up in the park, right?
It does. A lot, usually I come on their off day. So,
right.
And sometimes it's a surprise. Sometimes I know I'm coming either way. But usually it's, they hop out of the pool. We go do our Jedi training and they go hop back in the pool. So, you know, it works pretty well that way.
Now, do you have a normal Jedi name?
No, just my name. I just go by Justin.
Okay.
Jedi Justin.
Jedi Justin.
Unless they helps. Ask me. Every once in a while, they'll ask me to. I was like, all right, that's fine. I'll just use my Disney Jedi name. That's fine.
Okay.
But every once in a while.
Okay. Yeah. Just for our listeners who might be interested in this, what's your hours? And I know you're working two other jobs here. But
so for the most part, Universal's just every once in a while, and so is the hotel for the most part. It's not. So on the whole, most of what I'm doing as far as how I support myself and my family is, you know, my TV commercial work, but also doing Jedi. So I'm pretty flexible. We'll put it that way. Like, I can do whatever, you know, as long as it works out with whatever, I'll come whenever. I've been somewhere as early as 6 o'clock and as late as 10 p.m.
Okay, that was one of my questions, you know, start time, finish time. But now you've given me another question here, and that is, I've just heard you say TV work.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, I mean, I've done more commercials than I can remember. TV-wise, just a few things here and there. Did a show called The Oath, which at one point Sony was trying to make a streaming service to kind of rival Netflix and Hulu, called Crackle. And The Oath was supposed to be their flagship show, and it just didn't quite work out the way they wanted it to. We filmed that down in Puerto Rico. And I was also Scott Peterson, the guy who killed his pregnant wife.
Lacey.
Yep, Lacey. I played Scott Peterson in a TV movie.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
That was brave because, you know, people see you.
They do.
In real life. And I have seen this with other
That one was, because at the same time there was like five different Scott Peterson things came out at the same time.
Yeah,
that's kind of how Hollywood works, is it's all kind of, everything kind of comes at the same time.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's weird.
Now, okay, when you're walking in your local mall or your Publix, wherever, do you ever get recognized? Yeah. Not from your TV work, but just in
Jedi.
In
no, I don't get recognized from TV work at all. I get recognized for Jedi.
Okay.
Oh, cool.
That's happened several times. In fact, the weird one, there's the Publix. It's down by it's down by Disney Springs, right off of where you turn to go to Animal Kingdom.
Right.
It's a tourist Publix. And if I go there
off of Irmo,
somebody's going to recognize me every other time if I go there. and the weirdest one, I think not weird, but it was a grown man who asked to take a picture with me. And you're like, okay, man, cool. It is fun. Cause like, then you get to talk about Star Wars and they're going to tell me some kind of story about something. And they're like, great. And it makes you feel good. Makes you feel like you're doing something important.
Oh, that's neat.
No.
What a life. Telling you.
It's something. I mean, the whole being, there's Orlando famous, there's Disney famous, and those are very real things that I didn't understand. Especially like with the Jedi show, your stage is so visible. And so if you're there often, you wind up getting all kinds of weird Facebook messages and requests, and people figure out, you know, who you are. And that was a weird experience the first time around.
It wasn't me, I'm telling you.
It was, but that took some getting used to.
Oh, I'll bet. So, okay. So you just said you've been married 5 months. Mm-hmm. Where did you meet this lovely lady?
So we actually have known each other since we were in high school together.
Oh, my gosh. Are you serious?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was 15. She was 16. We dated in high school. And then apart again, and then finally got married.
So you married an older woman then?
Okay. Yep. I've been there.
Much older, just a few months.
I'm leaving that alone.
Thank you, Steve.
Yep. Leaving it alone.
Yep.
Now, does Lindsay work at Disney or no, Universal?
She's a teacher.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, I don't.
So, did she follow you, or was this just? Did it just come back together?
It just came back together. I mean, so we never were out of each other's lives. And
that's
so
good.
It just kind of,
yeah,
okay. It's just one of those things.
That's cool.
That's really special.
Yeah,
it was. And it is.
Cause you don't hear about kids out of high school. I mean, every once in a while we've had a few.
Do, they usually get married right afterwards. They don't get married.
Yeah.
You know,
like Rick half
later.
Rick, what, they got married after, well, they're in West Virginia, so it was probably after elementary school.
Okay, that's an edit. Thank you, Steve. Oh, boy. Okay, now, let's go to the new resort.
Yes.
Sure.
Now, have you actually worked there yet, Justin?
I've done, did a number of the shows. I will likely not be there much hereafter. Just because of the nature of it. But yeah, it's something. The people that go. So we didn't, like, so, I mean, I was there from, I started in September. So before it opened, I was there for, you know, almost 6 months.
Right.
Which is a neat experience as far as being able to watch, especially watch the Imagineers do what they do. And there's nobody in the world who are better than, you know, at what they do than they are.
Yes.
Some technologically crazy stuff, like that they've been able to come up with an engineer, and then also do it in a way that was very quick and under a massive amount of stress, and dealing with things that were outside of their control, like some, you know, marketing things that did not go according to plan.
Right.
Well, yeah. Say the least.
Yeah.
So that part was fun, is be able to kind of watch this show go from what it was to what it is was a really neat experience. And then looking and seeing the people who have come, who are those people? They love it. Just because, honestly, and I say this, we are a very talented cast of actors and performers. We are. The people who come are so into being able just to live out their own Star Wars story that it could be anything, and they're going to have a great time. My favorite one was there was this. I don't know how old he was, but he came in full costume, and he called himself Senator, and I don't remember he made up a name, some Star Wars, you know, Senator Bloop Blarp or whatever. And when it started, it was just, you know, us saying, "Well, hello, Senator, welcome, Senator, glad to have you." And by the time it was over with, at the end of day two, it was not just us, it was also the rest of the cast members and crew, and also every single guest in this entire building going, "Oh, the Senator is here," and this was just beaming from, you know, just out, just as proud as he could be that he was getting to be a Star Wars senator. Like, it was a thing for him that he had probably dreamed of his entire life. So
prior to the resort opening, and maybe I'm saying, I should be saying resort, I should be saying...
The cruise.
We've called it everything, so it all works.
Yeah.
Are you classed as cast members, or are you given names that you go by?
As far as on the ship?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We're all different characters, and our character has a specific, you know, you have Link Amok, the cruise director. You have Riola Keeban, the captain. Or you have Wraith Cole, who is guy is the galactic superstar guy is manager and a general scoundrel.
Scoundrel, yes.
Scoundrel, yes.
Right.
So with this, you are following more of a script.
Yes. That was one thing that was so when we started, it was much less scripted. And as we wore on, it became more and more scripted. So a lot of it is kind of you have to find your way to get to the end goal. But that the thread is pretty rigid. You know, it allows for some kind of fluidity as far as how you get there. But there's a distinct, you know, path to get from point A to point B inside the show.
Yeah. My sister is a huge YouTube fan.
Mm-hmm.
So the original Voyage,
mm-hmm.
Of course she showed it to me. I went down to Atlanta last weekend. So I saw a couple of the ones that, you know, the first ones that were done. And it's amazing.
It is. It really is. And the food's amazing. You know,
everyone said that except for the blue shrimp.
See, I love the blue shrimp, but that's also probably because I had to beg for it for 3 months. And so when I finally, I was like, you know, I'm going to love it regardless because I've been begging for this because I missed it when we tried it. And so, and I'm a shrimp cocktail is one of my favorite things in the world. And so I liked it. It's a really interesting cocktail sauce with like a weird chipotle smoke to it. It's really good.
Ooh. Okay.
I'm not asking you to respond to my comment, but I look at it and it's a turnoff to me to see the colors.
I know.
No.
Well, yeah. I mean, you don't even make your own food sometimes.
No.
And the blue itself is not a food dye. It's a flower, and they use the flower to color it.
Oh.
It's an edible flower. That's what I understand. That's what I remember hearing. It's an edible flower that they kind of cook it with, and it makes it blue. It's like a natural food day almost.
I do understand, though, they're probably getting rid of that if they haven't already.
That I wouldn't be surprised. Just because it's super weird.
Well, it's just it looks weird, but everyone said if you taste it, it's familiar.
Yep.
So
it tastes like a shrimp cocktail. It's a good, it's high quality shrimp cocktail.
It just shows what people's minds can do.
Mm-hmm.
I know you've only done one or two shifts, but...
You still eat your food, Sheila.
Oh, thank you, okay. Steve. Bland English food. no color to it, Justin. Just bland.
Or taste.
Or taste. I know you haven't done this, you know, many times since the cruise has been going, but what is the youngest person that you're aware of that's come on board?
Oh, we've had everything from, I mean, newborns, like, well, not newborn, but like we've had babies, you know, or you know, parents with babies come on. Whoa. But as far as like, I don't know, somebody who participates in the actual show, maybe 4 or 5 years old, like they can do it. In fact, there's things that are built into the show that kind of cater to them because the whole show is not really made for them. But there are things that we have put in to make sure that they feel seen and included and get to enjoy it just the same as everybody else.
So if you're playing one character, mm-hmm. when you finish your shift, and I'm not talking about you personally, the next person comes on with the same name, but with a different face.
Oh, yeah.
Is there any questions from the kids of, no, you're not him?
Well, there's only been a handful of people who have done more than one cruise. So if I'm here on Monday, I'm going to be here on Tuesday too. So your shift is 2 days.
Every cruise, which is two and a half days.
It's 2 nights.
It's the same people. It's the same cast.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
So the next group that comes in, you might have a different
I might cast. And you might not. And for the most part, we've only had a handful of people that have done it twice so far.
Yeah, and I probably know them.
Yeah, I know one of them. Oh, I forgot her name. But she... In fact, she had a question as far as like, I'm going to change my itinerary because that person isn't the same as the person I wanted to interact with. So I'm going to change the whole thing on my data pad. Like, all right.
Interesting. No, I what I was trying to say is if you were working between 8 and 2, the person that replaces you from 2 to 10 is still shaking his head.
On the whole, not really. I don't think that's ever been a thing. One, nobody really listens that hard to hear me say, because I want to say my name like once the entire show. And I think Nedris says my name like twice.
Okay.
But on the whole, we're just all different Jedi. We all happen to wear the same costume.
Now, before the resort opened, were you as cast members given the privilege of testing out for one night?
No. That was it. We were not. That was a source of much grief and complaining. We had a preview night, so we were able to bring two members of our family on board for like 3 or 4 hours. Other people were able to do a full stay, like some of the other crew members, like some of the people that worked at the hotel, but the actors were not.
One thing that gets me is I get the impression that once you're on board, basically, you stay on board.
To a point, on day two, during the morning, you have things you need to accomplish on Batuu. So you're going to take a shuttle or a pod, and you're going to fly to, you know, to Galaxy's Edge. And there's things that whether it's my character or somebody else, we need you to accomplish while you're, you know, inland. And then you'll come back in the early afternoon.
Right.
But other than that, for the most part, you can leave if you want to, if you feel like, you know, you paid for it, so you do what you want. But that's a whole lot of money for you to be, you know, skipping back and forth.
Yeah.
And on top of that, too, there's a lot going on. So if you leave even for 30 minutes, you're probably going to miss something.
Okay.
I've heard that.
And I'm doing this. I'm an ex-smoker, but I'm doing this for our smokers out there. What happens if you're a smoker? I mean, can you just, there a place you can just go out?
Nope. You have to take, you have to go. Trying to figure out how to phrase it inside the universe. you're good. You have to take the shuttle down, and you have to basically go out to the entrance of the hotel.
Yeah.
To smoke. And then you got to go all the way back, and you have to fly back to the ship.
Yep.
So to speak.
Okay.
Because they have the outdoor area, which is the climate simulator, but that is a no-smoking area.
Right. As I say, it wouldn't bother me. Well, I wouldn't be able to stay there anyway because I think it's too expensive for us at this moment. But, I mean, for those that do smoke, I'm sure that is a question that would come up.
I would take you, but name one Star Wars movie.
Star Wars. Return of the Jedi.
Oh, she
did. Hey, yes!
Dang, okay.
Yeah, I have watched one or two Star Wars movies, but that was eons ago, actually.
Yeah.
Yes.
So with everything that you got to do on there, is this something you want to continue doing?
Which part?
On the Halcyon.
Yes, I wouldn't mind doing it. It's not... It's tedious, I think is a good way to phrase it from an actor's perspective. It's tedious. There's things where it's very repetitive. I think it's neat because every cruise is different and every time you get to meet new people doing, you know, new things. But at the end of the day, the hours are terrible because you're there from like 2 o'clock to 11 o'clock every day. And I think too, there's not a... You run into a pattern of the same kind of thing. And I guess, too, the right, wrong, or indifferent, the paywall is weird, even from my perspective. Okay. You know, because I know that when I was doing Jedi, you know, a normal family can sacrifice to take a trip to Disney World.
Right.
They cannot sacrifice to take a trip to the Galactic Star Cruiser. You know, so that part's a little weird. Are kind of can be tough to kind of reconcile. But as far as it goes, as far as the immersive theater, as far as the improv aspect of it, my goodness, yes, I would love to do more of it.
Okay.
It stretches you as a performer, and it's also a lot of fun.
A lot of the things before the previews and people got to go on the preview, actually. and then paid guests just a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. A lot of people were extremely nervous. I was nervous.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, Lord, please, 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 please don't fail.
Yep.
So initially, it looks like it's a success, especially especially from some of my people who are very extreme critics.
Mm-hmm.
And they're happy, even with maybe not completely the price point, but.
Right. Even with that, the show itself. Oh, dogs are barking. The show itself is pretty incredible. It really is. And the people who created it, Michael Tara Garver, and they're the best in the business. They really are. And I think, too, the way that they've done it has been very well thought out and very carefully kind of created. So it is good. It's very good. I think, too, what's neat is that you don't have to be a Star Wars fan. You could drop any other good versus evil story inside of our story, and it would work just the same, just about.
Yeah.
You know, tweak it a little bit, and it would work just as well.
Yep.
You know, so it kind of speaks to kind of those things that are deep inside of you anyways, you know, this struggle for good versus evil, light versus dark.
And I have been a Star Wars fan since it came out in 77, 76, whatever. I never had a desire to really do the Halcyon until I listened to some of the people, friends, fellow podcasters and stuff. I'm excited.
It's neat, and it really is. I'm curious what the next few months will bring as far as what we'll wind up and where we'll wind up going, because I know that things we have to adjust and shift a few things here and there. Mm. And then you're also kind of curious what happens when the initial or when the newness of it wears off,
right?
You know, because already a lot of the newness is gone. Like people come in, they already know who everybody is. Like they've already spoiled the whole thing on the internet. And you're like, well, then why did? Okay.
Like, yeah.
Whatever things for yourself. Like, it's fine.
Yeah. But
you know, I think it will do well. I do.
And that's why Steve and I, in so many ways, limited our questions on this to you, Justin, because it is out there. But I know there's a lot of people that don't want to know. And
I wouldn't. I would not at all. In fact, that's kind of one of the fun things is that we get so kind of lost or sequestered into our role that when I went there I was just there to kind of hang out and watch a few weeks ago. I was seeing things. I'm like, I didn't know that happened. Yeah. Like, I've been here for 6 months, and then there was things I was like, oh, so that's where he goes when this happens.
Right.
Oh, that's fun. You know, so it's nice to not know. It's nice to, you know, be surprised.
Well, I mean, maybe 6 months from now when you come back on the show for updates, you know, then we might have a few more questions. But I think it's still early days.
Because we've only opened, 3 weeks now?
Yeah. And, you know, as I said, it's out there for people that, you know, want to go and find out what's going on. But that's really not our style to give too much away, to be quite honest.
Of course.
We are going to have to wind down. I cannot believe 90 minutes has passed. It's been amazing.
Oh, I agree. I'm glad you brought me on.
And I know it's not the last time that you're going to be on our show.
Good. So just tell me when. I'll be back.
Cool.
She never says that to me.
No, you're fired.
Yeah, I usually get that.
But one thing that we have to do before we let you go, Justin, is there links to your private lightsaber training?
Honestly, I would say just find me on Facebook and send me a message on Facebook. That's the best way. You can also find me. I mean, Facebook, it's just Justin Aldridge, Aldridge. You can find me on Instagram. That's actually, I'll see those messages easier because Facebook likes to lock me out of my message request folder when I get to it.
Yeah.
Everyone panics and then I have to go. I'm so sorry. You know, but if Instagram would be the Justin Aldridge, and just send me a message there and we can get you on the calendar, as it were.
Okay, so it's the Justin
Aldridge.
Aldridge. That's it.
Yep, that's it. That's my Instagram handle. And then Facebook is just, you know, Justin Aldridge. And if you go to Ear for Each Other, just type in Jedi and you will find far more than you need to. Everywhere.
Okay. And for those drivers out there,
that's type in Jedi Justin. It'll pop up like that. You just search all the Facebook, Jedi Justin, and it's there.
Cool. Jedi Justin. Okay. And for our drivers in cars that's listening to this at this moment, these are going to go into our show notes. So, you know, you can check it there.
You don't write while you're driving.
And, you know, if for some reason you can't find Justin through these links, just email me at Sheila@monorailtales, and I will certainly get you connected with Justin. Justin, I can't thank you enough for coming on. It's been a true pleasure, you know, from hearing about your baseball days.
No, it's been absolutely, I mean, totally enlightening to hear your story.
Yeah.
And that's what we're about. We want to hear people's story.
Well, good.
And all of the ups and downs that you've had in your life, you know, of going through auditions, the ups and downs, and I know in your life as an actor that's, you know, how it goes. But a lot of people like me can't handle that.
Rejection.
Yeah, the rejection. Yeah.
Acting in general is kind of a war of attrition in the sense that it's a lot of it. There's a lot of very talented people who just never made it past the first kind of wave of rejection.
Right.
And some people never face the rejection. So, you know, I mean, that's good for you. I'm glad. But and a lot of people, well, probably should face the rejection and move on to something else. That's also kind of another sad truth. But yeah. You know, you have to get kind of comfortable not fitting something. Because like a lot of the commercials I audition for, it's not because of a lack of talent. It's because I don't have blue eyes, or it's because they wanted somebody who, or it's because I reminded him of his neighbor when he was a kid who
was get off my lawn.
Yeah. Like if any number of like weird things, that's why you didn't get it. Like, okay. You know, so you get used to those things and you move on and you know.
Well, it's great to hear, to have that story, and we're great to share that. So,
yeah.
And that's a really great way to end this show. And to our listeners, thank you so much for joining in on this episode. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did in making this episode.
Me.
Justin, I cannot thank you enough. We are going to be in touch again. And Lindsay, you got your husband back. So good night all. Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Stars glow for you. Go see the world, cause it's all so brand new. Don't close your eyes, cause your future's ready to shine. It's just a matter of time before we learn how to fly. Welcome to the rhythm of the night. With something in the air you can't deny. It's been fun, but now I've got to go.
And thank you!